These racks and shelves contain a lot of books. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions. How do you feel about them? Do they mean something to you? Are they your friends? Have you a real love of books and learning? You do? That's good.
I want to tell you about all the libraries in my life. Starting with the library that wasn't there. Let me set the scene. No, I think I'm not set in the right mood. It's all wrong. Let me select something a bit more pensive.
Pensive, adjective, musingly or dreamily thoughtful, a pensive young poet, suggestive of sad thoughtfulness. Her face had the pensive mournfulness of a seraph in an old sad painting.
That's better. So, there wasn't any public library in my city when I was little. I only received books for Christmas or for my birthday because, we weren't poor, but also not rich enough to give me books every time I wanted to read one. But then, when I was 11, my old primary school created a library for its students. And even though I had just graduated, they let me get a library card to borrow books. Can you imagine my excitement when I filled in my very first book request? No, you cannot. Because you, probably, grew up in a city full of public libraries. But for me, it was magic. Imagine me, full of excitement, feeling like the heroine of my books while completing the library card, actually pretending that I knew how to fill it in and too proud to ask for help. I am going home with my brand new book. And I read it in a couple of days. Finally, I can read as fast as I want because, now there is a library in town and I can borrow 3 books a month. And they have a shelf full of books for me to read. Stop there for a second. Yes, I know that as a listener you should be allowed some freedom, but I know where this is going, and I need to change the music to put you in the right mood, so that you, as a listener, have enough time to sit in the mood and to absorb it, right? And now something terrible is about to happen. I might also add a couple of thunders. They're always good to signal that something horrible is about to happen. Follow me to the kitchen. I am at home. I am about to return the book to the library. A second ago, I left the book on the kitchen table, being careful that the table is clean. I'm just going to the toilet before going out. And I witnessed the horrific view of my mother carving indelible scars on the shiny book cover as she uses it as a support to write a shopping list. The bright blues and greens of the thick cover of my very first library book, now ruined forever. Be with me, please. stay with me as I cry mortified. Mom is unable to understand what's the big deal and why I am behaving like a small child. For what? I'll do my mother. Ma cos'è che c'hai? Perché stai piangendo? Ma la vuoi smettere di piangere?
Translation from the Italian. What's the matter with you? Why are you crying? Will you please stop crying?
Don't leave me alone, please. Accompany me to return the book to the library. There is no spring in my step. I look sad and I feel scared and guilty for mutilating the once immaculate book. You don't need to squint to notice the wounds on the cover. Come with me. As I fearfully enter the library and walk to the big table. The librarian doesn't look at me, but she looks at the book and notices immediately the disfigurement. And she freaks out. She starts screaming in front of everybody. And you might not be surprised that I remember exactly what she said. Guarda come hai rovinato questo libro nuovo. Siete degli animali. Non meritate niente. Let this feeling sink. Because it is a feeling that is heavy and with long-lasting consequences. Because that was the last time I visited a library. Any library. Until I went to uni. And at uni is where we find library number two. Let's call this chapter Library at Night. We won't stay long in this library, but before I start, I need to set the scene. Picture an old building in the most exquisite fascist architecture, with columns, Latin inscriptions, you got the idea. It's night. No, I didn't say summer night, I just said night. It's night. Winter night. I'm not in the library, but outside, at a distance. From where I am, I look at the reading room through the huge windows, and it feels like the movies. It's almost 8 p.m. I have been staring at the windows for at least 1 hour. Inside the library is the boy who crushed my heart. He is now dating another girl. He's there with him inside the library. I spy on them. I watch every time they go outside to smoke. Every time they leave the page to talk to each other. And every word that I cannot hear, every glance that I can see very clearly. It's another step in my heart. Stay with me just a moment. Can you see how cold I feel, leaning on the stone wall? Can you hear the wind? The library closes at 8 sharp. It's better if we go now. I don't want him to see me here as he drives by to take her home. We are almost finished. Just one more. Bibliothek der Kinderklinik. We are in Berlin, before the wall came down, and precisely in the library of the Children's Clinic in Schloss Charlottenburg, a real castle. This is going to be a very short chapter, a happy tale. Let me introduce you to Schumacher, the head of the library. Let's start setting the scene. I am in my 20s. I have left behind a library at uni and the boy who broke my heart. And I am now having the time of my life in Berlin. Berlin in the 80s, before the wall came down. I have been assigned to this library as part of a program for young unemployed. I mean, I'm not unemployed as such because I am attending uni in my hometown in Italy, but this is before the internet. And for the German bureaucracy, I am a young unemployed person. So they offered me a part-time job as assistant to head librarian, Frau Schumacher. Frau Schumacher is just as you imagine her, a blonde middle-aged Valkyrie, very German, very traditional, a woman who has always a strong opinion about everything. So Frau Schumacher hates that the library is introducing a computerized system. She hates that the doctors consulting the library never bring back the volumes in time. Always overdue. Frau Schumacher hates all sort of things and most people, but Frau Schumacher loves me. Unconditionally. Because, unlike many other young people assigned to the library in the past, I love books. Can you see me? Grown up and independent in fabulous Berlin of the 80s. I am all smiles. And even though Frau Schumacher is a meddler, and I am very protective of my private life, I reciprocate her love. Because every couple of months, Frau Schumacher allows me to travel to Italy so that I can sit my university exams. And then she has me working full-time for a couple of weeks to level out the hours. We are almost at the end of my libraries. But I must ask you one last thing. To accompany me back to the library at uni in Italy. Remember? No, all wrong. It's not night anymore. It is daytime now, a glorious winter morning with so much light and sun. And I am standing next to the very library because I just left the Aula Magna, the big pompous lecture hall where I was bestowed my diploma to become the first person in my family to earn a university degree. Applause, applause, applause to me!
Beh, ancora qua? È finito. Andate, dai, via.
This is art. Art is a way in which we express our feelings and thoughts about ourselves or about the worlds of people and nature in which we live.
Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me. Bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul.
July 3rd, 1888. From her sickbed, mother called to me to read to her from the New Testament, the book she dearly loved. She requested me to read the 103rd Psalm, the 15th chapter of 1 Corinthians, and the 17th chapter of St. John. She said she was ready to depart, but must wait until the Lord pleased to take her. She died as she lived, relying on the promise of God. Bernard Hope.
Who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercies.
Mary Elizabeth Hope was born in Prince William County, Virginia, April 6th, 1812. She had excellent literary taste and enjoyed writing bits of verse as a pastime. She was very religious. She had little opportunity for early education, and learned to write during the Civil War so that she could correspond with her sons, George and John Thomas, who were in the Union Army. None of those letters remain. In February of 1830, she married her cousin, Peyton Hope. In October of 1837, they, their three small children, and several other family members, including Peyton's brothers, John and James, started off to Ohio to seek a better life. Departing in their two covered wagons with some of their belongings and livestock, they were off. It was an arduous journey with rough terrain. Along the way, one of the brothers' cows became lost, and John and James Hope went back to find it. Much time passed, and Peyton went back to the campsite to find them. They were gone. It was thought that they were captured by an Indian tribe. It was only later that they were found on census records back in Prince Williams County. It seems probable that, becoming discouraged with the rough country they were crossing, they preferred to return to Virginia. We learned by a sketch published in another place that Peyton Hope is dead. Every year, as regular as June taxes, he called at the Tribune office to pay for his paper. He lived on Sunday Creek when it was no joke to sojourn there. If he did not actually fight wildcats, catamounts, and panthers, they were his near neighbors. He fought the stones, rocks, and roots of the rugged hills and made them yield a subsistence. Small in stature, he was uncommonly active. He carried with him an inward, cheery hope, more potent than the name he bore. When he bade us a cheery good morning last June, we thought he might live yet many years, but the old gentleman was nearing the eternal shore and now rests from his long and arduous labors. February 28th, 1885.
For almost two centuries, Americans have enjoyed the valuable privileges of freedom. Now, freedom needs each American to dedicate himself to its preservation. We must not allow our liberties to be endangered by neglect of our duties as citizens.
Simple Sabotage Field Manual. The contents of this manual should be carefully controlled and should not be allowed to come into unauthorized hands. The purpose of this manual is to characterize citizen sabotage, to outline its possible effects, and to present suggestions for inciting and executing it. Simple sabotage does not require specially prepared tools or equipment. It is executed by an ordinary citizen who can act individually and without the necessity for active connection with an organized group, and it is carried out in such a way as to involve a minimum danger of injury, detection, and reprisal. An important type of simple sabotage requires no destructive tools whatsoever, and produces physical damage, if any, by highly indirect means. It is based on universal opportunities to make faulty decisions, to adopt a non-cooperative attitude, and to induce others to follow suit. Making a faulty decision may be simply a matter of placing tools in one spot instead of another. A non-cooperative attitude may involve nothing more than creating an unpleasant situation among one's fellow workers, engaging in bickerings, or displaying surliness and stupidity. This type of activity, sometimes referred to as the human element, is frequently responsible for accidents, delays, and general obstruction even under normal conditions. The potential saboteur should discover what types of faulty decisions and the operations are normally found in this kind of work, and then should devise his sabotage so as to enlarge that margin for error. Motivating the saboteur. The ordinary citizen very probably has no immediate personal motive for committing simple sabotage. Instead, he must be made to anticipate indirect personal gain, such as might come with enemy evacuation or destruction of the ruling government group. Gains should be stated as specifically as possible for the area addressed. Simple sabotage will hasten the day when Commissioner X and his deputies Y and Z will be thrown out, when particularly obnoxious decrees and restrictions will be abolished, and so on. It should be pointed out to the saboteur that he is acting in self-defense against the enemy, or retaliating against the enemy for other acts of destruction. A reasonable amount of humor in the presentation of suggestions for simple sabotage will relax tensions of fear. The amount of activity carried on by the saboteur will be governed not only by the number of opportunities he sees, but also by the amount of danger he feels. Bad news travels fast, and simple sabotage will be discouraged if too many simple saboteurs are arrested. It should not be difficult to prepare leaflets and other media for the saboteur about the choice of weapons, time, and targets, which will ensure the saboteur against the detection and retaliation. Among such suggestions might be the following. Use materials which appear to be innocent. A knife or nail file can be carried normally on your person, either as a multi-purpose instrument for creating damage. Matches, pebble, hair, salt, nails, and dozens of other destructive agents can be carried or kept in your living quarters without exciting any suspicion whatsoever. Try to commit acts for which large numbers of people could be responsible. For instance, if you blow out the wiring in a factory at a central firebox, almost anyone could have done it. On the street, sabotage after dark, such as you might be able to carry out against a military car or truck, is another example of an act for which it would be impossible to blame you. After you have committed an act of easy sabotage, resist any temptation to wait around and see what happens. Loiterers arouse suspicion. Of course, there are circumstances when it would be suspicious for you to leave. If you commit sabotage on your job, you should naturally stay at your work. Specific suggestions for simple sabotage. Communications. Telephone. At office, hotel, and exchange switchboards, delay putting enemy calls through. Give them wrong numbers, cut them off accidentally, or forget to disconnect them so the line cannot be used again. Hamper official and especially military business by making several telephone calls a day to enemy headquarters. When you get them, tell them you have the wrong number. Motion pictures. Projector operators can ruin newsreels and other enemy propaganda films by bad focusing, speeding up or slowing down the film, and causing frequent breakage in the film. Audience can ruin enemy propaganda films by coughing loudly and by talking. Anyone can break up a showing of an enemy propaganda film by putting two or three dozen large moths in a paper bag. Take the bag to the movies with you, put it on the floor in an empty section of the theater as you go in, and leave it open. The moths will fly out and climb into the projector beam so that the film will be obscured by fluttering shadows. General interference with organizations and production. Organizations and conferences. Insist on doing everything through channels. Never permit shortcuts to be taken in order to expedite decisions. Make speeches. Talk as frequently as possible and at great length. Illustrate your points by long anecdotes and accounts of personal experiences. Never hesitate to make a few appropriate, patriotic comments. When possible, refer all matters to committees for further study and consideration. Attempt to make the committees as large as possible, never less than 5. Bring up irrelevant issues as frequently as possible. Haggle over precise wordings of communications, minutes, resolutions. Refer back to matters decided upon at the last meeting and attempt to reopen the question of the advisability of that decision. Advocate caution. Be reasonable and urge your fellow conferees to be reasonable and avoid haste, which might result in embarrassments or difficulties later on. Be worried about the propriety of any decision. Raise the question of whether such action as is contemplated lies within the jurisdiction of the group or whether it might be in conflict with the policy of some higher echelon. Managers and supervisors. Demand written orders. Misunderstand orders. Ask endless questions or engage in long correspondence about such orders. Quibble over them when you can. Do everything possible to delay the delivery of orders. Even though parts of an order may be ready beforehand, don't deliver it until it is completely ready. Don't order new working materials until your current stocks have been virtually exhausted, so that the slightest delay in filling your order will mean a shutdown. Order high-quality materials which are hard to get. If you don't get them, argue about it. Warn that inferior materials will mean inferior work. In making work assignments, always sign out the unimportant jobs first. See that the important jobs are assigned to inefficient workers of poor machines. Insist on perfect work in relatively unimportant products. Send back for refinishing those which have the least flaw. Approve other defective parts whose flaws are not visible to the naked eye. Make mistakes in routing so that parts and materials will be sent to the wrong place in the plant. When training new workers, give incomplete or misleading instructions. To lower morale, and with it, production, be pleasant to inefficient workers. Give them undeserved promotions. Discriminate against efficient workers. Complain unjustly about their work. Hold conferences when there's more critical work to be done. Multiply paperwork in plausible ways. Start duplicate files. Multiply the procedures and clearances involved in issuing instructions, paychecks, and so on. See that three people have to approve everything where one would do. Apply all regulations to the last letter. Office workers. Make mistakes in quantities of material when you are copying orders. Confuse similar names. Use wrong addresses. Prolong correspondence with government bureaus. Misfile essential documents. In making carbon copies, make one too few so that an extra copying job will have to be done. Tell important callers the boss is busy or talking on another telephone. Hold up mail until the next collection. Spread disturbing rumors that sound like inside dope. Employees, work slowly. Think out ways to increase the number of movements necessary on your job. Use a light hammer instead of a heavy one. Try to make a small wrench do when a big one is necessary. Use little force where considerable force is needed, and so on. Contrive as many interruptions to your work as you can. Forget tools so that you'll have to go back after them. Pretend that instructions are hard to understand and ask to have them repeated more than once. Or pretend that you are particularly anxious to do your work and pester the foreman with unnecessary questions. Do your work poorly and blame it on bad tools, machinery, or equipment. Complain that these things are preventing you from doing your job right. Never pass on your skill and experience to a new or less skillful worker. Snarl up administration in every possible way. Fill out forms illegibly so they will have to be done over. Make mistakes or omit requested information in forms. Misroute materials. Mix good parts with unusable scrap and rejected parts. General devices for lowering morale and creating confusion. Give lengthy and incomprehensible explanations when questioned. Act stupid. Be as irritable and quarrelsome as possible without getting yourself into trouble. Misunderstand all sorts of regulations concerning such matters as rationing, transportation, traffic regulations. Complain against ersatz materials. In public, treat Axis Nationals or Quislings coldly. Stop all conversation when Axis Nationals or Quislings enter a cafe. Cry and sob hysterically at every occasion, especially when confronted by government clerks. Boycott all movies, entertainments, concerts, newspapers which are in any way connected with the Quisling authorities. Do not cooperate in salvage schemes. In conclusion, acts of simple sabotage, multiplied by thousands of citizen saboteurs, can be an effective weapon against the enemy. Slashing tires, draining fuel tanks, starting fires, starting arguments, acting stupidly, short-circuiting electrical systems, abrading machine parts will waste materials, manpower, and time. Occurring on a wide scale, simple sabotage will be a constant and tangible drag on the efforts of the enemy. An effort should be made to add to their efficiency, lessen their detectability, and increase their number.
You've been listening to Low Orbit, Issue 1, Read All About It. Our first story is called Every Library in My Life, from producer M. Christina Maras. M. Christina is a versatile audio creative and AIR member with decades of experience crafting thought-provoking narratives. Her work, which includes both fiction and nonfiction, has been cited at prestigious festivals. M. Christina is passionate about scientific communication and education, and has worked with respected institutions and organizations in the field. As a podcast producer, M. Christina has helped clients effectively convey their message through storytelling techniques and immersive audio narration. She also has a strong background in radio journalism, having worked in Melbourne for 23 years, including at public broadcaster SBS. After that, we heard Hope Family History by Grayton Newman. Grayton is a Colorado-based multimedia artist, primarily focused on narrative audio and photography. He is an alumnus of NPR's Next Generation Radio program and a Society of Professional Journalists award-winning podcast producer. You can visit his portfolio at greyhoundbrand.com or just follow the link in the show notes. And finally, we heard a reading from the Simple Sabotage Field Manual by the Office of Strategic Services. That piece was produced and adapted for radio by me and read by Mr. Jonathan Brown. And that's it for this first new low orbit go-around, reboot, relaunch, re-up. I don't know, whatever you call it. There will be more, and very soon, actually. This is the first episode in what will be a seasonal show. So there'll be a season in the spring and then another one in the fall. Which is, I guess, the definition of seasons. So, anyway, I have a question for you. Do you want to be a part of this little zine thing? Great! This whole thing is a collaborative effort, so let me know if you're interested in contributing or participating or anything else you're thinking about. Email me at josh@rocketfromearth.com or find me on Blue Sky at Low Orbit Podcast and we'll chat. Oh, I should probably introduce myself. My name is Josh Madison and the producer of this little thing. But anyway, I think that's everything, so be sure to tune in again in a couple of weeks.
Hiya, folks, and welcome to Pizza Time Theater's Salute to America! This is the time of year when we celebrate the good old USA's birthday. So if you'll all join in with me and the gang, we'll haul out the red, white, and blue and sing a few songs about this great country of ours.
What a country! What a country! What a happy place to be!